if my technology works, we should be talking to Michael from Battlesnake on FBI. G'day, Michael. Can you hear me there?
I can.
And we can hear you too. Excellent.
Yeah, awesome.
All right. Thanks for joining us all the way from Melbourne.
My pleasure.
You're going to be in Sydney, not, I guess, until next weekend.
Yeah, we're getting in on Friday night and playing on Saturday night at the Excelsior Glee.
Excellent. Well, when we finish chatting, I'll give out all the details about that.
Cool.
But I might ask you about the other acts that are playing, because they're all kind of interrelated. Now, speaking of interrelation, a couple of you, is it from Battlesnake, used to also be in the Silvermine tapes, or is past tense, in fact, inaccurate with the Silvermine tapes?
Look, I mean, Silvermine tapes and time, like, it kind of has its own relationship with time. Like Max says, you know, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave the Silvermine tapes. It's eternal in his mind, and, you know, that's kind of true. I mean, we never really split up. It's just that we started living in different cities, well, three of us anyway. Scotty moved to Sydney, and then Gus moved independently to Melbourne. And we did a little tour, like, after that happened, and we played a few shows, but it's just a lot of work. It's a lot of work getting everyone together to rehearse, especially when everyone in Adelaide, when we'd go over there, they had full-time jobs. So we'd be sort of rehearsing from, like, 10 at night till 2 in the morning.
Yeah. I know that feeling. Okay, so you hooked up with a bass player in Melbourne, basically?
Yeah, Adam Smith, great bass player. I used to play with him in, like, a pop band in Adelaide in the early 90s. And, he moved over to Melbourne at the same time. This funny thing happened when I moved from Adelaide to Melbourne. I suddenly met all these Adelaide people that I hadn't known in Adelaide. There's what I call the Adelaide diaspora in Melbourne.
Yeah, so definitely.
There's a lot of cool things you can do in Adelaide, but there's a bunch of things it's pretty hard to do there. And so a lot of, especially creative people, end up, you know, moving to bigger cities. And, for the first couple of years that I lived in Melbourne, I seemed to only be hanging out with Adelaide people that I hadn't really known in Adelaide. It was this funny kind of circle of people, all lovely people. And Adam's one of them. He's a great bass player. He's always been one of my favourite bass players. So,
well, we can hear his bass playing, I'm not sure you can, in the background, and playing the first track from your album, Umlaut.
Hey, you know.
Which is really beautiful music as well. And this track is very, I guess a lot of the album is quite sedate. This has a really kind of atmospheric and quiet tone to it. The impression I get is that Battlesnake Live, as we'll be seeing you this coming weekend, is not necessarily comparable to that sort of sound.
Well, I mean, you know, we play free improvised music, so it's always unpredictable. It really depends a lot on the room and, I suppose, the time, you know, and our mood. But, we played a show late last year when I was graduating from the sound art course at RMIT.
Right, yeah.
And that was ended up being in a hall that the Victorian Opera uses. And so the acoustics in there were amazing, and you could play really, really quiet stuff, and it would just carry beautifully. And we got to play that way again a bit, in a way that we sort of did a bit when we started, because we were always playing in small spaces. But of late, look, we tend to be a bit kind of crazier and more raucous, and for a while we were playing these pretty raucous parties, and so, you know, the music would tend towards being something maybe a bit more kind of danceable and intense in that way. More recently, we've sort of found some zone which kind of combines the weird with the rock, with sometimes these moments of real spaciousness and, abstraction, I guess. I mean, all music's abstract, but extreme abstraction.
Right, excellent. And not being jazz musicians or whatever, or maybe even folk musicians, where there's a tradition of improvising as such, was the formation of this band and the kind of development of what you do something something different for you and something you had to work on as a trio in some way?
Look, there's a couple of strands to the answer to that in my mind. Mm. Like, one is all music comes from improvisation as its point of origin anyway. Like, it all starts from someone sitting down, mucking around with something, or some people standing, you know, whether that's a bit of software or a piano and they've got a bit of manuscript in front of them and they're writing down the good bits, or you know, or it's a band in a room trying something out and then kind of going, okay, well, that bit was good and that bit was good, let's try them together. You know, it all starts from play, you know, from trying stuff out. That said, I mean, when we did start, I remember we'd have these conversations where a couple of other guys would go, yeah, okay, so that was a good bit, let's try that. And I don't know, personally, I really resisted it. And we'd had a lot of experience in the Silver Mine tapes of just improvising. We'd go through months where we'd just get together twice a week in this basement in the CBD that we shared with a couple of other bands. And it was an amazing experience to just kind of walk in probably at about 9 p.m. and there'd already be a room full of people playing, and sit down and just start playing, and sometimes wouldn't talk for a couple of hours. Just kind of play and play. And then at a certain point, you know, I go, hey everyone, how you going? You know, after we've just been playing sort of space rock for a couple of hours. So me and Gus were in that outfit, so we'd had a lot of experience of that sort of, unplanned music, I guess you'd call it.
And so when you recorded this album, was that pretty free? Was it not?
Yeah, entirely. Yeah. I mean, I suppose the thing, compared to some of the stuff that we do live, I mean, when we recorded that, you know, you've got microphones on everything, and microphones are expensive, so
yeah,
and not to kind of, well, we tended not to just flail around as much and knock things over, and, you know, I mean, it'd be like the way the drum kit can be taken apart, you know, it's a collection of instruments, and you're always free to kind of, you know, you can take the cymbals off and hit other cymbals with them and stuff like that. In the recording environment, I don't know, we were a little bit a bit shy, maybe, that first time, so maybe a bit more restrained than we are live. But I don't know, I really like the results, but it's very much a sound that we were playing at that time and about that room and that space and that weekend, you know, that we recorded all that stuff. It's always kind of different, but we do go through sorts of phases of being preoccupied with different things and different ways of playing and stuff.
And there's only a few copies left of this album, which is sad for people in Sydney who are going to be incredibly excited about what you're playing this coming weekend. But I have a promo that that you sent out last year sometime. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure whether... Did you end up just self-releasing?
Yeah, we did. Look, to be quite honest, we were kind of a bit... We went through the whole long process of getting everything ready. I mean, we had a lot of improvisations and, you know, a bunch of them were boring, so we threw those away. And then of the other ones, you know, sometimes we felt like we wanted... With the recorded stuff anyway, we wanted to kind of add things, you know, because we had that liberty. So, you know, some of the synthesized stuff. I mean, the studio we were in, he had all these beautiful old analog synths that it just seemed like such a shame not to kind of, you know, throw that on as well and make the most of that. But I don't know. I think I've spoken to a bunch of other musicians about this, and, you know, when you do things the way we did, which was kind of with mates' rates and... you know, getting to use studio time when it's not being used by someone else, you know, it means you're going up like a night a week or a night a fortnight or something, and it takes, you know, a year or a year and a half to go through this whole process. And by the time we'd done that, we were kind of a different band in some ways, you know.
Yeah.
And so that last step of actually properly, you know, having a real launch and a real release and kind of, you know, sending out press releases to everyone and making a big event of it, we keep kind of getting to the edge of doing that and then sort of not quite doing that. I mean, we've actually recorded the second album already.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's... But I was thinking about it the other day and going, man, you know, we've just put all this work in, and it's so, and I really like it as well. It's not that I don't like the record, I think it's really beautiful, and I'm really happy with it, but yeah, it's just something about that emotional relationship to that recording. I don't know, it's something like that last little step of commitment, like asking someone to marry you or something. we've got this slight cold feet at the edge. We will do it.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, yeah, you put so much work into it, but somehow actually releasing it is, it's a whole different world.
I know. I want to make sure it happens in the next few months anyway. I mean, it would just be ridiculous.
It's a beautiful album. It really is worth getting it. Is this, okay, you can't hear it. The listener
can. Violin.
You can? Okay. Who's playing that violin?
Yeah,
not one of you?
A friend of ours, Sophia Dunn. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Violin.
She's played it. She plays in a whole bunch of, different ensembles. I guess she's had that background and sort of seen as a bit more that kind of, I don't know, that urban gypsy kind of thing that there's a lot of in Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sort of approach. Yeah, so for a while, we're not, you know, in terms of the sort of musical language that we operate in, we're not jazz musicians at all. Uh-huh. Like, our approach is a bit that way. And so for a while, we were doing this thing of just kind of having people sit in, which is a real jazz thing.
Yeah,
we
right.
just have someone come round one night or for a recording or for a gig, and we just go, you know, generally if it was a gig, we'd sort of play the first 20 minutes just by ourselves, just, I suppose, to establish the space and in some ways, I guess, define the level of restraint that we wanted to have operating. And then someone else would come in and join in. I mean, you know, yeah, I suppose it was a way to avoid like that classic jam band thing where everyone's sort of playing a lot of notes right from the start for, I don't know, an hour or something. I don't know, whenever I listen back to things like that, it's like, yeah, it seemed like fun at the time, but really could have done with a lot more space.
Totally, yeah.
Try to, I don't know, I suppose impose that to some degree, you know, to make sure you don't get that, the dullness that you can get from overplaying.
Yeah.
Especially with guitarists, I find, like, with what we do, so much of the movement and the dynamism and the relationships between everything, the kind of rhythm section relationships, and I think it kind of works. It all works well together, but as soon as there's a guitarist in the room, it's like everything we're doing seems to just become the background for... I don't know, it's kind of like a movie star walking into a room and suddenly all the rest of us look like extras, you know? The sonic equivalent of that. The guitar suddenly... You know, suddenly it's like, oh, I'm kind of playing a backbeat, so a guitar can be a guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
All
that's
that stuff.
Very interesting.
But we have had had some really good performances and sessions with guitar that have gone really well. But yeah, it's a delicate thing. It doesn't always go well.
Sure. Well, yeah, I guess the violin has a very different kind of way of imposing itself on a song.
So, there's a while, there's a few months, I think, when her schedule and ours sort of coincided well, and we're playing together quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like the stuff that she did.
Yeah, well, that's the second track on Battlesnake's Umlaut album, and that is also still available as part of the first New Weird Australia compilation?
Yeah.
So that's their free downloads, all those compilations. So if anyone wants one of your tracks, they can find it there, newwordaustralia.com.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, you'll be playing this Saturday night in Sydney at the Excelsior in Glebe. And as well as Battlesnakes, there's a couple of other acts on the menu, one of which is actually just a subset of Battlesnakes. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's kind of like the antimatter to... to Battlesnakes matter. So that's me and Gus.
Okay, so drums, and is he playing keyboards? Oh, he's playing.
No, in this one he plays drums, and I play a guitar where all the strings have been tuned to the same note. So he plays like a very... I'll start at the beginning. So that band's called The Leafs, and that's kind of, I suppose, from me and Gus playing like instrumental music for years. but also, you know, sometimes secretly and sometimes not secretly, just wanting to be singers, you know, like wanting to be lead singers in a band. And like between the two of us, waiting for about 70 years to be asked to be lead singers in a band, and no one asked us. So eventually it was kind of like, well, you can be the singer in my band if I can be the singer in your band. And did this kind of ultra minimal thing, which is like, yeah, a two drum kit. It's like a floor tom and a snare, which Gus plays. And I've been teaching him drums because he wasn't really playing drums before this. And I play a guitar, mostly play a guitar with all strings tuned to the same note. And we play a lot of songs. Like our rule when we started was we would kind of lock ourselves in a room and we couldn't leave until we'd written 10 songs.
But excellent.
They didn't all have to be good.
But they all had to have lyrics.
A rule about that, but you know, it was like we have to write 10 songs before we're allowed to leave the room, and we did that a few times, and then you know, then we had 30 songs, and so that was you know, a quite a decent set. And you know, a lot of the songs were 45 seconds long or whatever. So, but yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of Battlesnake in that with Battlesnake we're really about not knowing beforehand how things are going to play out, and therefore, you know, when it goes well, we get to arrive at playing these kinds of music that we couldn't have anticipated, you know, a few minutes before. And whereas with the Leafs, it's very much like I'm a real believer in, you know, that a pop song gets like an awful lot of its power from structure, from decisions, you know, these things about like, you know, deciding to have half a chorus here, or you know, like the first line of a verse, and then you know, a pop song is 100 decisions, you know, in 2 minutes. A good one is, anyway, I think. So for me, you know, the Leafs is all about decisions and rehearsal and you know, and songs. Whereas Battlesnake is not so much about songs; it's more about just an approach to making music and interacting with instruments and each other, you know. I'm really lucky being able to be in both, you know. It's like they in my life they complement each other really well. They're, you know, kind of two sides of just, you know, great things you can do in music. Like being able to just improvise with friends is awesome. Like it's a real privilege. And you know, being able to be a singer and, you know, play like 20 songs in 30 minutes is heaps of fun. It's really good.
Yeah, very good fun. Well, I'm sure it'll be lots of fun on Saturday night. And you have another kind of relative playing, I guess.
Yeah, so Scott Gillespie is an old friend of ours from Adelaide who moved to Sydney, how long ago? I would say 5 or 6 years ago. And he, he's originally from Glasgow, and so he's one of those folks, maybe a bit like me and Gus, who have kind of always been sidemen in other people's projects, you know, so generally been like a rhythm guitarist or kind of a, you know, the guy in the band who sort of fills things in with guitar, but he's always had a solo project for years, like probably a decade, which is called Frontiers in Photography, and really beautiful stuff, like kind of often quite restrained, a lot of repetition and cycles, and this beautiful kind of Scottish sort of, you know, Gaelic lilt to everything, kind of like a, I don't know, it's to say he was a bit like a Scottish Will Oldham, kind of from maybe around the sort of, maybe like Master and Everyone kind of period of Will Oldham, but he's sort of been turning it into more of a band, like in the last year or two, and he plays a lot of instruments, and he's found two other people who play a whole bunch of instruments as well. So it's becoming more of a band, and they've just really recorded an EP. So this show on Saturday it's actually their show, like EP, and we're kind of coming up. We've sort of done this like a distributed tour where 1 month. We both went to Adelaide and played there with friends, and then next month he's coming to Melbourne, and we've kind of lined up a show there. And then
cool.
This weekend he's lined up a show in Sydney, and we're doing that.
Nice. Yeah, I think unfortunately you were going to play a show with Founder as well, weren't you? But that wasn't able
yeah,
to.
Yeah, look, it was meant to come up, but it sounds, I don't know, just from reports and just seeing like Scotty's experience, it sounds pretty tough. Like yeah. Lining up gigs in Sydney at the moment. I'm just kind of gleaning this from afar, but I mean,
unfortunately, yeah, I put a gig on for this excellent English duo Icarus a few weeks ago, who mm-hmm. played in Melbourne as well, and we had a lot of trouble finding places. So yeah,
like somewhere in Melbourne or
no, in Sydney. Yeah. No, Melbourne's not a difficult town really.
Venues closing or what?
Oh, venues closing, yeah, and just sort of I don't know, the competition on any particular night and things. Sort of, it's just yeah, it's a bit hard.
But there don't seem to be any less bands in Sydney than there used to be. It's just that there's less. It seems like, well, from the distance, it seems like there's less venues, which must make it hard for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a certain amount of kind of your warehouse gigs and bedroom, you know, sort of whatever, your living room gigs and things. But, yeah, they kind of fall by the wayside pretty quickly as well. So, yeah we need to do something about this. I don't know, Melbourne style, just kind of march into the city, and I don't think it will happen quite the same way.
Yeah, well, I suppose I mean, that happened here with the Tote closing. Yeah. Which was a real shock to everyone, because the Tote's just such a, I mean, and I think because the Punters Club had, you know, got turned into a pizza joint.
Yeah, that's very sad.
Yeah, there was still that, it kind of reopened those wounds, I think, and I was like, oh, we can't, you know. Can't let that happen to the Tote. I mean, sadly, I don't know the status of the Tote at the moment. They were talking.
It's reopening in 6 weeks or so, I hear. The bar open, Pony people are taking it over, so I don't know what they'll do with it. And
no more about that, idea.
But at least there'll be some music there again.
Awesome.
Which is nice. So I'd like to play a track and not talk over it from your album Umlaut. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to play The Shadow of the World's Tallest Midget, which sounds to me like you're having a bit of fun in the studio and with your sort of, you know, recording, editing gear and stuff there as
well. Yeah, we smashed two things together, I guess. So we had two, you know, like out of that recording weekend, we had a few things that sort of worked as extended pieces, you know, where there was like 10 minutes in a row of music that we thought kind of stood up and wasn't boring and, you know, went somewhere and had some intensity and kind of had something, you know. But then we had some sort of other fragments kind of sitting around that like we really, really liked, but they didn't really, we think, you know, there was like a minute here and a minute there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was this thing that we just called the DJ Shadow bit, because it had this kind of doom, 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 this sort of big bass and this organ drum machine kind of going away. And the other was kind of the carnivalesque thing called, which was called The World's Tallest Midget. And one thing sort of led to another, and we kind of smashed them together. And so, you know, the obvious title was Shadow of the World's Tallest Midget.
It makes as much sense as it needs to, yes. Excellent. Well, we'll now hear what that sounds like. And the gig is this coming Saturday, Battlesnake, The Leafs, and Frontiers in Photography.
Yeah, there's a fourth band actually, Transat, which is...
Oh, Transat, all right, yes.
Yeah, that's that's a band that Scotty plays in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about them. I looked at their website and I couldn't, you know... There wasn't music on or anything, so I've heard they're really good. Gus has seen them and he reckons they're awesome, but I'm just going on faith. I've heard they're great.
Okay, well, it's sad that I haven't found any, gotten hold of any music of theirs either. But Battlesnake, certainly. Are you going to play a decent length set of some sort?
Battlesnake? Look,
given that there's four.
We always judge that on the fly, and...
Okay.
Look, for us, we would rather keep it intense and we always try not to overplay. Like, we would always tend to err on the side of, you know, like, rather than play for an hour, we'll play for half an hour.
Yeah, okay.
Choice. Generally, I mean, it's different. It's different at a party, say, you know. We can turn into a much longer kind of thing if people are dancing and stuff. But when we play in pubs... we just try to keep it intense, I guess, is the thing. And depending on what the people in the room are like and how things go, I mean, that, it could be... I don't know. This isn't a very informative answer, is it?
No, but that's cool. It will be what it will be.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be a really great kind of thing altogether. Great evening.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what people should be going to next Saturday night in Sydney. Excelsior in Glebe, is it? Not the Surrey Hills one?
Yeah, it's one in Glebe. And it's free, too. Seems to be.
Even more of a reason. And if you get down there early enough, there's, what, about two handfuls of copies of this album.
Yeah, we kind of meant to do another pressing because we've basically sold out the first one, except for, you know, we each had a few copies just sort of tucked away, sort of pulled them all together. I think there's like 7 copies left. they're $10. We'll have them with us.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, and this is one of the tracks thereof. Thanks heaps. You've been listening to Michael from Battlesnake. This is Utility Fog on FBI with Peter Hollow, and this is Shadow of the World's Tallest Midget.